Hi, this is Ken McCarthy with PlantWisdom.org, and we have a very special guest today. This is an individual whose work you really need to be familiar with if you're a true student of plants and their healing potential. Our guest is Dr. James Duke, and I think we're going to be calling him Jim during the call because that's the name he goes by.
My preferred handle.
Excellent. So I urge everybody to do additional research into Dr. Duke's background, because it would take all day to explain it all, but I want to give you just some of the big highlights.
First of all, he was a scientist with the USDA's Agricultural Research Service from 1968 to 1995, nearly 30 years.
And during that time, among many other things, developed a truly extensive, comprehensive database of the phytochemical and ethnobotanical qualities of plants. And he's the author of more than 30 books, including The Green Pharmacy, which is a great place to begin to understand all this stuff, and hundreds of articles. He's worked on the use of plants for dealing with cancer, for healing, and even for providing energy. Again, I'm going to urge everybody to do a little more research beyond my introduction, because there's a lot to learn. But we'll just use that as our basis. And what I've asked Jim to help us with today is some of the fundamentals of understanding plants, to provide us with a background for understanding the true potential of cannabis. Because I feel that the way it's been portrayed in the media has been very superficial, very sensational. And the real story, the bigger story, is being missed. So, Jim, could I ask you, can we start out by just explaining what the heck is a phytochemical? Why does it matter? And why do we need them, since we can manufacture any chemicals we want these days?
First of all, I'm not a chemist. I'm a botanist. But we prefix the word chemical with phyto to specify that it is a plant coming from a chemical coming from a plant. Have phytochemicals well known to our genes if our ancestors ate these plants. Synthetic chemicals, as many pharmaceuticals are, have never been encountered by your genes in your evolutionary history, so they are much more liable to be harmful and less liable to be helpful. That is the synthetic chemical versus the phytochemical.
Great, and this may be an oversimplification and maybe a mechanization of what's really a living process, but is it roughly accurate to say that plants are the most sophisticated factories for chemicals that we know of?
I would certainly say that. I would say that each plant, we have 300 species, medicinal species, unfortunately no cannabis in my green pharmacy garden, and I've come around to saying with a good backup in the literature that every plant contains about 5,000 to 10,000 different phytochemicals, all of them biologically active. That shocks most people, but I can back it up in the literature. However, in compiling on cannabis, I've only found 167 to date that have medicinal activities. I'll find more, and more will be discovered. But there are probably 5,000 to 10,000 medicinal plant phytochemicals. There are 5,000 to 10,000 phytochemicals in cannabis sativa and every other plant in my garden. Some unique to cannabis, some common to all green plants, some common to all life.
So when you have 5,000 to 10,000 different chemicals in a single plant, I imagine that there's synergies that exist in a mix like that we can't even wrap our minds around yet, or even with all of our science.
I would quite agree with you. It's mind-boggling, as they say. And I've been compiling on my phytochemical database. I retired from the USDA. I think I'm changing what you said. I retired in 1995, and I've been adding to that database ever since. But I've got more than three times as much data offline as online, and synergies do exist, so do antagonisms. And the most important thing about that 5,000 to 10,000 chemicals, if your genes already know them, as I maintain the genes of people whose ancestors consumed them, then your genes will guide your body to dip into that medicinal potpourri, shall we say, and pull out those things it needs and exclude those things it doesn't need. So that we have, if we have 10 or 20 of us sitting around having a rosemary tea or just smelling the rosemary, we will absorb it differently according to our genetic history and our current history and what we need.
Wow. So this is a
I call that the principle of a homeostasis, but your body grabs what it needs and excludes what it doesn't need. When you give it a cannabis, you're giving it many of those 5 to 10,000 chemicals. When you give it a synthetic drug, you're usually giving it just one chemical, which your genes don't know and which may damage you, which may help you too.
And so this is clearly a radically different model than the model that says we'll find the one chemical in the plant and we'll make that it.
That's the dumbest thing that this FDA and Big Pharma have done.
Oh.
They used to call it better living through chemistry. Let's specify better living through phytochemistry.
Yeah, I've seen the T-shirt.
Oh yeah, I got one.
let's focus on the cannabis plant. In the popular media, if someone just goes by that and nothing else, it appears that the health benefits of cannabis are vague, and it also appears that it helps with pain, and it helps perhaps with underweight condition. In other words, it stimulates the appetite. There seems to be a lot more to potential to the plant than just treating those two issues. What have you found so far from what you've been able to find out? So what we're talking about is, if we look at the media, if someone's depending entirely on the popular media, they're getting the idea that cannabis might be helpful, and yet it does seem to help with pain, and it does seem to help with people that are underweight because it stimulates appetite. But surely there's a lot more potential to the plant than first of all, a vague notion, and second of all, these limited applications. So I'm wondering what you've discovered as potentials that the plant can help people with.
I'll give you a recitation of those. Let me interject one more thing here. Among the 300 plants in my garden, I think the two most valuable all around are turmeric, which is the source of the drug curcumin, and garlic, which is a source of all of these have many, many compounds. And they are really, I think, the most jack of all trades medicinally. But we should have in the garden cannabis, which I can show you in my database as chemicals that are proven to support, for example, helping Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, and you mentioned appetite. Pain is very important. Cancer is very important. And my list in my database, probably 1,000. Many of which won't mean much to you, and several of which don't mean much to me if I don't look them up again. But cannabis ranks right there with turmeric and garlic as one of the best all-around medicinal plants, in my personal opinion. And you mentioned the bias in the modern literature and the pop literature. You'll find more people warning about its dangers than advising of its benefits. But I think that will change as our country gets on the ball and figures out the truth, which has been eluding us all these years, thanks to the heavy anti-drug literature, especially cannabis, morphine, and cocaine.
Speaking of dangers or purported dangers, and speaking of phytochemicals, when somebody is depending on the popular media for information about cannabis, they only seem to hear about THC. Can you talk about THC and the other phytochemicals that are important in the cannabis plant, and which ones are really the important ones for health?
Okay, I have an oversimplification, and I think maybe I sent you a poem in which I praise CBD, cannabidiol, which is more or less the good guy, the medicinal guy, and THC, which is more or less the high guy. That's cannabidiol versus tetrahydrocannabinol. And most cannabis plants will contain some of both of those. Criminals are breeding for higher THC. Medicinal botanists are breeding for higher CBD, cannabidiol. And many other cannabinoids, there are probably 100 exocannabinoids in cannabis. Those are ones that occur in the cannabis. Then there's a weird group called endocannabinoids, which occur in us but don't occur in cannabis. And that's why we have so many receptors for the chemicals, the phytochemicals in cannabis, because of our endocannabinoids. That's a complex subject which I don't understand well, but I can send you papers on it. Maybe you can get somebody smarter than me to talk about that. But in cannabis, the cannabinoids are probably the most important thing. Another group of chemicals that we find in aromatic plants, and they contribute to the aroma of cannabis, are the terpenoids, volatile compounds, especially volatile when they're burned. And these are very important to the medicinal activities of cannabis. Most of these terpenoids occur in many plants, in many aromatic plants, but they are important to consider in balance with the cannabinoids and a whole bunch of other chemicals. As of today, I can name 167 that have proven activity. Some of them, hundreds of activities. One that I just finished only had one medicinal activity in the PubMed literature, and its activity was that it was androgenic, but only in bees. So if you wanted your bees to be all drones, you could put this methyl oleate, a phytochemical that's in cannabis, into the food of the developing pupae, what do they call the larvae of bees. You'd get more drones and fewer workers. Most of us probably would rather have workers, but that depends on what your designs are.
There's different ways to utilize the cannabis plant. And again, if someone's dependent on the popular media for their education, it seems that the only way to get the benefits is to smoke it. There is a little bit of talk about eating it, but mostly when you turn on the TV, you're seeing people smoking cannabis in an attempt to get medicinal value. Clearly, there are other ways to utilize medicinal values in a plant other than smoking it. Can you talk about some of those other ways? And I imagine the literature shows that cannabis is used in a lot of ways beyond other than smoking. Could you discuss that?
Yeah, I am very impressed with the nutritional quality of hemp seed. It's got one of the best ratios of fatty acids and many other chemicals in it. And it should be one of the major foods on the market because it's cheap if we didn't mess around with it. And that's very good. You don't have to smoke that. You eat the seeds. And more importantly, I'm an ex-smoker. I have 90 pack years of cigarette smoking in my 85 years. That was 3 packs a day for 30 years. And so I would rather not, if I were to medicate with cannabis, I would rather go for a high cannabidiol, low THC extract of cannabis that could be consumed as a liquid, or in some cases in a brownie, as they call them. But there are many different ways besides smoking or vaporizing the cannabis. And I don't ever intend to smoke anything because of the abuse my lungs have already experienced. But I would certainly go for a hemp seed brownie in the morning and think it would be just as good as any breakfast cereal they've ever put in front of it, all the junk cereals they sell.
When cannabis was used in American medicine 100 years ago, I guess, clearly it wasn't, you didn't go to a medical dispensary and smoke it. It came in bottles,
I've not studied that much, but I know that Thomas Jefferson grew it on his plantation. But that was more for the fiber than for the medicine or for the food. But it has all three of those virtues. It's an all-around crop, and medicine is really one of its more important features. But early medicines were frequently extracted, sometimes in alcohol, and that could be the whole plant or the seed. Or the savvy people looking for THC would go for the hairs up around female inflorescence.
I haven't done the research yet. Maybe you're more familiar. In the medical dispensaries today, are they aware that it's not the THC that's the key element for therapeutics? Because I know that there's been a tremendous amount of breeding over the last several decades to amplify the THC content in cannabis. I wonder if there's any activity going on to figure out how to amplify the healing phytochemicals.
many of the cannabis concerns, three or four of which may be quoting my database, are looking to get balanced CBD, high CBD, low THC, many different concerns, and I'm told you can even buy them online. And I'm not to that point. I think some of the people that I'm working with will provide it to me if I decide it might slow my creeping Alzheimer's. I do have what we call mild cognitive impairment. But if I live long enough, I'll get Alzheimer's. Anybody, if they live long enough, will get Alzheimer's. Cannabis has at least 25 different compounds that can contribute to the slow, often synergetic, to the slow retardation of the advance of Alzheimer's.
Great. So there is a awareness that there's more to the cannabis plant than THC among the medical dispensary people.
I would say so, and I think even the literature reflects that. I've just spent this year on the PubMed literature, and there are many negative opinions, many positive opinions, and I'm gleaning from the positive opinions, and I have a feeling that many times the negative opinions are advanced or sponsored by those who would stand to lose if cannabis really becomes a serious medicine, as it should, like Big Pharmacy and their supporters, the FDA.
Well, this has been a theme throughout the modern history of cannabis, hasn't it, that there seem to be industrial interests lined up against its use, which became very active in the 30s. It's a very strange thing. I don't know of any other time in history, maybe I'm missing something, when useful plants were demonized and criminalized and heavily regulated. And let's talk about the how things are evolving right now in terms of making cannabis available as a medicine. From what I can see, people go to a physician and describe their symptoms, and if the physician, if they live in the right state, of course, and if the physician is sympathetic, he or she may write a prescription for cannabis, and they'll go to a medical dispensary where they will purchase their cannabis. And that cannabis is, from my understanding, is pretty much exclusively grown in, well, it's grown in certainly in controlled settings, and it's grown in where in factory-type settings with lights and often hydroponics and so on. I imagine there's pros and cons to that approach. I mean, one pro is, I guess, that you can greater control, you know, how the plant comes out if you're growing it that way. Can you talk a little bit about the positive aspects of the controlled indoor plantation method?
Well, they have selected many different ratios of THC to CBD, many experimenters over the country in many states. And once you get that ratio established, if you grow it in a controlled environment where you control most of the what we'll call the outdoor variables, you are more liable to get that ratio in the end product than if you grow it outdoors where nature, you know, puts different stresses on plants, and different stresses on plants change the ratios of different phytochemical constituents. So if you want consistency, I would say you're more liable to get consistent in an indoor environment. But if you want natural, and some people believe if it ain't natural, it ain't good. I'm not among those. I think natural is often best, so you better grow it outdoors. Let it experience the vicissitudes of nature, which will probably cause an increase in what we call secondary metabolites, and these are usually the medicinal metabolites, and it's less good for food or the primary metabolite. So stresses like drought or heavy wind or storms or animal predation will cause the marijuana plant that you're growing to change its chemical ratios in response to those stresses. So it's less liable to be predictable how much CBD and how much THC you will have. You can manipulate it once it's harvested to increase or decrease either the good guys, cannabidiol, or the bad guy, tetrahydrocannabinol. And those are generalizations. Each of those chemicals have some good benefits, and they're very frequently synergetic with each other, such that the combination is better than pure one or pure two, pure CBD or pure THC.
Okay, so one of the issues that I have with the way this system is being proposed is that the only people permitted to grow the plant would be licensed parties, and the cost of the plant is pretty high considering what it really costs to grow it. And also the privacy issue, you know, for instance, if I want to grow some garlic in my backyard so that I have a garlic supply and I use that to promote my health, that's my business. If I want to avail myself to the health properties of cannabis and I'm in the correct state and following the laws, I have to register as a user of cannabis. And that's just a different dynamic. I wonder if you have any comments on that.
I can see how industry tends to build in protections for their industry. Cannabis is becoming an industry, and monopolies will develop here and there, and they will cost the average consumer. As I mentioned earlier, I have 300 plants in my garden. I wish I had 301 species. If I were in D.C., 15 miles south of me, I could grow 6 plants in my backyard, which is my green farming garden. So if I were under D.C. regulation, I could grow 6 cannabis plants in my garden. And that would be enough for me and my family, because I've read enough about how to grow it that I will have to. As a matter of fact, I've landed in ganja fields in Jamaica for tour. But that's not going to happen. And industrialization, commercialization, that's capitalism at its best. And as you've seen, when they take cannabis and make nabilone, dronabinol out of it, that's FDA approved, but it costs about 600 times as much as it should cost, just because of the cost of getting that FDA approval, which includes a whole lot of support from Big Pharma and FDA, DEA, many law enforcement. The wild cannabis harvested as it was once harvested could be the THC variety, which would be more liable to get you high. So we're encouraging, in a sense, by our industrialization, criminalization as well, because the people that are breeding for high THC, they will sell to the criminals. The people who sell in medical marijuana will have to go through certain FDA loopholes that will make it much more expensive and not necessarily any more beneficial.
Interesting. And your core training is in ethnobotany. Would that be a fair statement?
I have to classify myself. I would say I'm an economic botanist.
Specializing
in medicinal plants.
And in the course of your career, you traveled the world and saw how plants were used by different societies. Did you have any firsthand encounters with the use of cannabis, the growing of cannabis in different countries? I read an article. It's funny. I go to Mexico every winter, and I always read things in the Mexican media that I never see in the U.S. media. And one of the stories I read was a survey. First of all, it started with the blanket statement that, hey, the whole world's using cannabis right now. It was the first statement in the rural areas of the world. And the second statement was just a brief but broad description of all the different ways it was used. Sometimes it was used to apply to injuries. Sometimes it was used for eye problems. It was just amazing, the list of things they stated. I'm wondering if you had any firsthand encounters with the plant in its uncorporatized or unindustrialized setting and how that what you saw. If anything.
Well, I didn't see a whole lot of cannabis except when I landed in the ganja fields in Jamaica, and that was to study how we might suggest alternative crops that would be competitive with economic. For a while, I was involved in alternative crops for opium, cannabis, cocaine. But I do remember that in Thailand, it was served in vegetable soups. I don't know how much of what part was in it, but I never experienced it growing in a field. I have found it growing as a seedling planted by some hippie probably at Machu Picchu, but I've not seen it very often except within a mile of my house. I've run into clandestine planting of small plantings in the forest, hard to detect. And, you know, it jeopardizes a botanist who's always wandering through the woods. It's like the moonshine down in North Carolina where I did my graduate work. But I didn't have much experience. but I have compiled from all around the world, and I'll be happy to send that after this conversation, a list of many of the folk uses in the individual countries that were reported in economic botany literature.
Oh, great, great. And we'll post that and some other links underneath this interview so that people can read further. Here's a place perhaps where we can wrap this up and take it to the next logical step, which is, given your experience with plants and with their economic uses and your knowledge of the medical potential of these plants, cannabis in particular, what would your ideal outcome be if you were emperor of the United States and could just declare how this plant should be treated and how the research should be conducted? What would you say about that?
Well, all my life I've been for legalization because I think making it illegal just fills our prisons, expense we don't need. I would recommend, again, that it be legal to grow it, just because it's easy to grow and cheap medicine, cheap food, and we should encourage cheap foods and cheap medicine. But I understand the fear of criminal uses, getting high. Every plant has a flip side. There are good sides and bad sides, all. But for some reason, our administration has emphasized bad sides of cannabis and minimized, at their own risk, I'd say, the good sides of cannabis. There are many.
What would be, in an ideal world, how would you see the plant being integrated into daily life? You know, if it were not a criminal plant, and if we just sort of treated it rationally and used it to its fullest, how would you envision that looking?
Well, realizing how cheap it is to grow, I would encourage cereals based on cannabis seeds. I would expect home remedies for many of the ailments that it's been used folklorically all over the world. As your Mexican friends say, it's everywhere. I agree. It's one of the most ubiquitous of invasive weeds there is. And it's invasive because it's got all these good chemicals in it. But we make these chemicals more expensive by putting legal limitations on it.
Great. Well, Jim, thank you so much for this background on this plant. And listeners, we got the background from one of the most authoritative sources possible on this. I urge everybody to look into the work of Dr. James Duke. You'll never get to the bottom of it. There's an endless amount of things to go through, and it will enrich your understanding of plants. As remarkable as they are, they're even more remarkable than we realize. And Dr. Duke's been one of the people who's helped make that point clear and has helped do the background research and gathering and accumulating of this information so that we can begin to understand how much is involved. One of the things that I learned on this call that really jumped out at me was there's 5,000 to 10,000 phytochemicals in every plant.
Yeah, most of them haven't been named, but you can see the little bleeps on the graphs that they print out that represent phytochemicals that have yet to be named.
Well, I guess if I were to suggest a vision for the future, I'd like to see a future where this information was taken seriously. In other words, instead of flying to Mars or whatever it is we're planning to do or building a bigger bomb, maybe we would take some of that money at least and devote it to educating a new generation of scientists to focus on these substances and to try to understand them better and to try to understand how they work in synergy. And we're almost at the point where we've got enough computer power, possibly. We may not have yet enough yet. We may need even more. But we're starting to have enough computer power to start to model these interactions and these synergies. And to me, that would be a much more interesting use of our brain power and our science power than, let's say, making genetically modified corn that can absorb endless pesticides. So I encourage everybody, again, Dr. James Duke, you'll find books and articles and web material, databases. It's a lot of fun, and it's really interesting stuff. Jim, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to give us this important background so that as we go forward in our understanding of this plant and all plants, we're doing so on sort of a solid ground, so we have potential to, you know, really develop our understanding as broadly as possible.
I applaud your closing statement, Ken. We certainly should be investing our money closer to home, something practical like cannabis, a good medicine, a good food, a good fiber, a good friend.
Great. And Jim, you have a website, which I don't have at the tip of my tongue. Can you tell us what the website is where people can go to follow your work?
I'd love to take this opportunity. I'll have to check my email because it's in my, and I can call it up, and which you won't waste, you'll save it and record it. My website is http://www. Everybody knows that by now. And then it gets specific. After the www dot, there's an ARS, which stands for Agricultural Research Service, dash, GRIN, G-R-I-N, which is a retrieval system at the USDA, then gov/Duke, http://www.ars-grin.gov/Duke, D-U-K-E.
Great, and we'll print that out on the page, so, and we'll even create a loop, a link so that people can click on it and go directly there. I believe you also have a site called thegreenpharmacygarden.com. Is that yours?
Yes, my garden directress, Helen Metzman, who's been with the garden 10 years and is really a beautician at keeping the garden beautiful, runs that website. We frequently post things. We'll probably post something on cannabis before long because we're getting into the argument. D.C. is so close and we're so far.
Well, Jim, again, thanks a lot. It's broadened my understanding of this, and I hope for our listeners, too. This is a very important topic. You know, we're basically made of plants. We eat them. We live in them. We are dressed in them. Our bodies are made from them, essentially. And that when you talk about closer to home, it doesn't get any closer to home than understanding our plant friends and neighbors. So for Ken McCarthy and for plantwisdom.org, we've been talking with Dr. James Duke, and definitely you might want to listen to this call a couple of times because we covered a lot of very important fundamental information. Thanks again, Jim.
You're welcome.